Let's pick up our story in Genesis chapter 34 today, verse number 8. We're talking about the marriage negotiations happening between Hamor and his son Shechem, with Jacob and all of his sons, about Shechem getting married to Dinah, the baby sister, if you would, of Jacob's sons. Now, I already developed, I think, in length, my conviction that this is not the story of a rape. And I gave you all my reasons yesterday for that, and I'll add some more today. This is the story, I think, of young love jumping the gun. That they had sexual activity before they got married. And that is the reason for the use of the Hebrew word for humbling, because they had not followed proper social norms. But Shechem is trying to make it right because he loves Rachel. He is clinging to her in the Genesis chapter number 2 use of that word. He wants to spend the rest of his life with her, and he is speaking to her heart, so she seems to be responding back to him. So here are the negotiations happening at the encampment of Jacob, and the big brothers are all mad. And I shared with you yesterday, I think it's because they're big brothers and they don't like the idea of thinking of their little sister being involved sexually with somebody she's not married to. That's just the way some big brothers are. And so they are listening angrily to the negotiation while thinking about how they can get even with Shechem for what he's done. Now, Dinah is somewhere around 16 or 17 years of age at this time, because Jacob's apparently been in the area of Shechem for about 10 years or so. And her brothers are all in their upper teens, and a few of them are in their early 20s. Shechem is probably in that same age range, later teens, early 20s. That's my guess. So here comes Dad, who is the king, for all practical purposes, of Shechem. He's the leader there. Verse number 8 of Genesis 34. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. Please give her to him to be his wife. Make marriages with us. Give your daughters to us. Take our daughters for yourselves. You shall dwell with us, and the land shall be open to you. Dwell and trade in it and get property in it." So Dad effectively says, hey, why don't you guys just become part of our community? You boys, you marry some of the local girls, and we will just become one great big community that interacts with one another. It'll be good for everybody. It sounds like a leader of a community, doesn't it? Especially when that leader is probably aware, after 10 years of interacting with Jacob, that everything Jacob does prospers. That's part of the blessing, isn't it? I will bless those who bless you and curse those that curse you. And so it'd be great if Jacob could kind of stick around and be part of the Shechem community. Now that's when Shechem, the boy, the young man, chimes in. So he's here at the negotiation as well. Probably fairly common. So Shechem also said to her father and to her brothers, "Let me find favor in your eyes. Whatever you say to me, I will give. Ask me for as great a bride price and gift as you will. I'll give whatever you say to me. Only give me the young woman to be my wife." So he is completely committed to this marriage. He says, I don't care how much I have to pay. I don't care what I have to scrape together and give to you as my my bride price. Now, remember what a bride price was all about. It was alimony in advance. That way, if the husband leaves the wife or kicks her out, her family first and then later her, they have the money necessary for her to continue on with her life. And any children that are in that relationship can still be taken care of by the mom. Or as life insurance, money on hand in case the husband dies before the woman, before the wife, and she's going to need the cash to take care of herself and the kids that might still be at home. So he's saying, I don't care. You tell me what you want in advance for the taking care of your sister, taking care of your daughter. I'll come up with it. So that does not sound to me like a rapist trying to do some sort of follow-up work with his victim's family. It sounds like a man who is genuinely and deeply in love with this woman. Verse number 13. The sons of Jacob answered Shechem and her father Hamor deceitfully because he had humbled their sister Dinah. Now, the word deceitfully is very instructive at this point. They are thinking ahead as to how to get even with Shechem. They don't like the fact that he slept with their sister without being married to her. And they effectively, let's just put it right out in the front here, they want him dead. Now, two of the brothers are particularly in mind here. Their names are Simeon and Levi. They are the number one and two sons of Jacob. They are full brothers of Dinah. And they are the ones that will take the lead in murdering, and I use that word advisedly, the men of Shechem later. They do not share their full intentions with Dad. And I actually have to wonder whether or not Simeon and Levi shared their full intentions with their brothers either. So what's the plot? Well, here it is, verse 14. They said to them, "We cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us." So they bring up the topic of circumcision. We, as a people, we circumcise all the males in our community, and so it would be totally inappropriate for our sister to get married to someone who is uncircumcised. Now, I find it interesting that when Josephus, the first century Jewish historian, tells this story, he definitely takes the tact that this is a rape story. And I've already said I disagree with people that take that tact, and I've given my reasons why. But in telling the story, he very carefully avoids any mention of this part, that the sons of Jacob tricked the Shechemites into getting circumcised so that they could then kill them. And I think that Josephus avoids this very touchy subject because he's writing his Antiquities of the Jews for a Gentile audience to try to help them understand Jews better and their history. But he knows that Gentiles already feel kind of weird about this Jewish practice of circumcision. And they probably would not react well to a story where Jews trick non-Jews into getting circumcised so that they could kill them. So I think that's the reason he avoids it. But we're not going to avoid it. We're going to talk about it because when we study history, we study it warts and all. Because that's how we learn. We learn to avoid the mistakes of the past. All right, so Verse 15, here's the deal. Only on this condition will we agree with you, that you will become as we are by every male among you being circumcised. So he doesn't just say, Shechem has to be circumcised to marry our daughter, our sister. All of you males in the city of Shechem and associated with it have to be circumcised. Now, later Jewish history has times where individuals are required to be circumcised to marry individual women. You might have heard about, or you remember, Agrippa II, his sister Bernice. They had another sister as well, who was engaged to be married to a Gentile, and that Gentile was forced to be circumcised in order to marry her. So that became a fairly common custom later in Jewish history. You want to marry a Jewish woman, you have to be circumcised as an individual. But this forced circumcision is not typical in Jewish history. I can think of one big exception to that, and that is during the intertestamental period. That is the period between the Old Testament and the New Testament. During the times of the Maccabees, the Hasmoneans, one of the Jewish Hasmonean kings conquered certain Gentile regions, and he forced the men in those regions to be circumcised if they wanted to live, and forced those non-Jewish communities to adopt Judaism as their religion if they wanted to live. Otherwise, he annihilated them. And so that's actually how the Edomites became Jewish almost 100 years, I think, before Herod and the beginning of the New Testament story where he's the king of the Jews. All right, back to our story, though. These guys, the brothers, probably Simeon and Levi, want all Shechemites circumcised. Now, the reason for that is they want them all weak and off guard. Continuing, verse 16, then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to ourselves. We will dwell with you and become one people. But if you will not listen to us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and we will be gone. So effectively, here's the deal. All of you men at Shechem have to be circumcised. Otherwise, we're leaving and we're taking Dina with us. So verse 18, their words pleased Hamor and Hamor's son Shechem. You might go, what do you mean it pleased them? It pleased them because that's not that bad of a bride price. If he can convince, that is, Hamor, if he can convince all the male members of his town to get a little snip-snip surgery, go through a few days of pain, then he will be able to marry his son, the future leader of the city of Shechem, to a very powerful, blessed Bedouin sheep and cattle herder. And it sounds like a pretty good deal to him. So verse number 19, the young man did not delay to do the thing because he was delighted in Jacob's daughter. And again, it's the word for being very happy, and it's a positive word. So he's in love with her. Now, he was the most honored of all his father's house. So this is another verse that I want to pound on a little bit, that this is a young love out of social norms that we're talking about here, not rape. Do you honestly think that a rapist When faced with having to snip a little bit of his sexual organ off in order to be married to his victim, would actually think that was a good idea? I just don't see that psychologically. And it also says here that he was very honored in the entire town. Everybody looked at him as a good guy, a guy that they wanted to see in charge of their community next. And they like him so much that they are going to be willing themselves to go through this painful surgery. So I just do not see this as a rape story, folks. And I think that you should rethink the issue yourself and come to your own conclusion. But I really do believe I'm giving a persuasive argument as why the traditional approach here needs to be abandoned. Verse number 20. So Hamor and his son Shechem came to the gate of their city, and they spoke to the men of their city. The gate, of course, is the community gathering place, especially for official deals. And they were saying, these men are at peace with us. They've been there for 10 years or so. Let us dwell in the land and trade in it. Excuse me. Let them dwell in the land and trade in it. For behold, the land is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters as wives and let us give them our daughters. Only on this condition will the men agree to dwell with us, to become one people, when every male among us is circumcised as they are circumcised. Will not their livestock, their property, and all their beasts be ours? Only let us agree with them, and they will dwell with us. So he puts a little bit of a spin on it. Look, the only way that we can kind of be allied with these people fully and mix our families together and have this shared prosperity that we can see in them is if all of us men get circumcised. And so he believes and is arguing it is worth it to have this positive move for our entire city. Verse 24. And all who went out of the gate of his city listened to Hamor and his son Shechem. Every male was circumcised, all who went out of the gate of his city. So they all agreed. Another reason for us to believe this is not a rape story. Do you think people in the community would agree to this sort of surgical procedure that would bring pain into their own lives for several days in order to cover up the rape tendencies of the prince's or the leader's son? And I just don't see that being the case. Verse number 25. On the third day, when they were sore. So you've got the first and second day. It's going to be painful. But by the third day, it seems to reach that peak. And in Jacob's little tent city, they would have been quite familiar with the healing process for any adult men going through circumcision. Remember, anybody that comes to Jacob's family as a servant even has to be circumcised. So they would have known day number three, it's the worst. So they waited until the worst possible day. Two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, took their swords and they came against the city while it felt secure and killed all the males. So this is where we find out the names of the two guilty individuals. Now I think it's going to be the case that the other brothers, at least some of them, are going to join in on the plundering of the city of Shechem. But I honestly think it was Simeon and Levi that did the killing. And how did they do it? How do they take out an entire city's population? Well, first of all, understand that the world population was a lot less back in that time. And therefore, the population of the Middle East was less. The population of Canaan was much less than it is, and therefore cities, big cities, were much smaller than what we would think of a big city. So a big city at this time might be several thousands of people. And so we're talking about several hundred men, more than likely, that went through this process, maybe a thousand or so. And they simply go from house to house because everybody's kind of lazing about, trying to recuperate, and they just kill them. And Dina's brothers took their swords, came against the city while it felt secure, killed all the males. They killed Hamor and his son Shechem with a sword. I think that might have been one of the first places they went. And took Dina out of the out of Shechem's house and went away. In the Middle East at this time, as we've seen in other stories, it was kind of customary for the bride-to-be to live at the home of the groom-to-be, to be kind of under the watchful eye of the groom's parents, probably part of the process of getting integrated into the new household that they were going to be a part of. So they kill Dina's future father-in-law, her future husband, and take her away. Now, because of the tack that I'm taking on this, I want you to imagine for a moment what this must have been like for Dina. She was in love with Shechem. That's all the indication I've seen here. And her two brothers, her two big brothers, Simeon and Levi, burst into the home of her future mother and father-in-law and her husband-to-be, and they kill her father-in-law and her husband. Just like that, right in front of her eyes probably. And then they drag her out of the house and take her back home. This must have been the worst day of her life. Verse number 27. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain, and they plundered the city because they had defiled their sister. Now again, the word defile here is humbled. And in the context that we're talking about, it seems to be a reference that he had slept with her prior to marriage. And the city kind of went along with that. And they thought everybody needed to pay. And then they took their flocks and their herds, their donkeys, and whatever was in the city and in the field, and all their wealth, all their little ones, their wives, all that was in the houses, they captured and plundered. So they're treating this as if it were a war. And in a war, to the victor goes the spoils. So they start collecting everything up. They start rounding everyone up. Probably going to sell them on the slave market. That's probably what's going through their heads. I have a feeling that Jacob is going to change that intention immediately when he finds out what they've done. Verse 30. Then Jacob said to Simeon and Levi. Notice the two boys again are his target, his focus. So that's another one of my reasons for believing they are the ones that did all the killing, even though the other brothers may have helped them do some of the plundering. He said to Simeon and Levi, "You have brought trouble on me by making me stink in the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites and the Perizzites. My numbers are few, and if they gather themselves against me and attack, I shall be destroyed, both I and my household." So he basically says, "What have you done by you murdering all these people? You have put a target on me, because the other cities from around here, they are going to want to do something about this. And when they get together in their little army, I don't have enough to fight that off." Now, in this moment, I think he's forgetting God. We'll get to God in a moment, but I think he's forgetting that God can bring together good even out of evil. He can bring something good out of something stupid. But he's saying, you guys have probably sealed our death warrant. And they said back to him, should he treat our sister like a prostitute? Or, as an alternate meaning of the word, as a sex object? And so that's what they're all mad about, and that's what they murdered people over. Chapter 35. And we'll kind of build up for tomorrow's story now. God said to Jacob, so God appears to him probably in a dream, and gives him instructions on what to do next. Arise, go up to Bethel, dwell there, and make an altar there to the God who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau. So God basically says, Jacob, you need to move. You need to move to Bethel, where you still have to fulfill a promise you made. So Jacob said to his household and all who were with him, meaning his servants, his workers, put away the foreign gods that are among you and purify yourselves and change your garments. It seems to me that Jacob thought that having idols inside of his tent city, which he either knew about and tolerated, or which he just now found out they were being used, the presence of these idols may have contributed in part to this fiasco. So he wants that stuff gone. Verse 3, then let us arise and go up to Bethel, so that I may make there an altar to the God who answers me in the day of my distress and has been with me wherever I have gone. So Jacob now makes arrangements to leave Shechem after having been there for about 10 years. And tomorrow we'll move on to that next part of his story.